Hey, everybody. Welcome to Reality TV Wrap-Ups for this episode 2 of season 5 of The Amazing Race Canada, in which our 9 remaining teams traveled to Fort McMurray, Alberta. Is it too soon to say that it was a flaming good time, Dan?
I don't know. It might be a little too soon, judging by the destruction, but I like it. It was good. It was fun to see different teams do well. And for the most part, the tasks were cool.
Yeah, I agree. I think we got to go to our top story, Dan. Who knew that the Newfie cousins had it in them to take first place on a leg? Did you call that? Did you see that coming? I certainly did not.
Well, it's funny because I mentioned last week, I thought they were very good at tasks. I mean, they did fine, but they weren't great at like navigating or whatever. And this leg was mostly, their teams did get lost, was mostly about tasks. And apparently, if you have math tasks, it really can change up the order. And they were pretty good the whole time. I was impressed. Last week, they did pretty well until the end when they kind of screwed up near the end and almost were eliminated. But they were really solid. Both the top two teams were really good.
Yeah, I have to say I was really impressed as well. And I think it's very interesting that we are getting these kind of sophisticated high-level math questions on Amazing Race Canada, because Amazing Race US really doesn't go any further than about fifth grade long division.
Yeah, a lot of times with US, it'll be like, okay, you're going to drive by this thing and you're going to count how many things you see, and it'll be like 10. Yeah. Or count by ones and it's 15. Where this, there are very few tasks where I'm like, I think I could do better than a lot of the racers. This one, I think I could have figured out, because really it was a case of, you know, algebra where you had to figure out, okay, I know these two numbers. How do I get to this number and then get to this number? And you had a calculator. So I feel like I would have done well. But as we saw with Team Giver, there are teams that are not as well equipped for this type of task.
That's true. But I think Giver was prepared to not be good at a task, and they seem to have done all right for themselves by being good at other things. And I think let's go ahead and start there. Like, let's start at this ropes course and the 3 express passes, I guess. Dan, what did you think about this 3 express pass situation?
You know, in theory, I look at this and I think it could be cool. Because you look at it and say teams could finish, which we sort of saw, and then go for the express pass, or teams might have to go out of their way to do it. And you could have a case where you really have 3 different teams getting express passes, which is kind of a neat idea. It creates more variability. Unfortunately, either because they didn't hide them well enough, so the first person just got them all, or because Kenneth is just that good at finding everything, that it ended up being kind of ho-hum in the end.
Yeah, it's basically the same express pass situation that we've seen in previous seasons, where you've got one for yourself and then you've got one you can give away. And in this case, you've got 2 you can give her away.
It's unfortunate. The thing that's good about it, in a sense, is that, one, I don't feel like, I was nervous with them. We talked about this last week with Team Giver, where we said they're going to get the express passes and they're going to be so insufferable. And they're just going to be, you know, kind of like we've seen in the past where teams just are like, on the US version, it seems in particular, just hold the express pass over people's heads and just become so irritating. And we didn't really see that. I felt like they kept it pretty close to the vest. I mean, and then they used it correctly. So if they can do that again next week, maybe it's okay, because we're seeing a team use good strategy. Unfortunately, the best situation would be maybe having 2 teams with express passes, or 1 with 2, you know, something different where you have more variations on it. But that's more the luck of the draw.
Right. You don't want one team to kind of steamroll over everybody else. But I think the fact that they burned one off pretty quickly, that's all right in my book. I don't want to see. We certainly don't want to see a repeat of like season 23 with, you know, Tim and Marie never shutting up about their express pass. But, you know, it doesn't seem like Team Giver is going to go that way. They seem very focused on their race rather than, I think they know that they're going to be good characters incidentally, right? They don't have to necessarily create a dramatic storyline for themselves.
Right. And also a good thing I like is that they have to give the other one away next week. It's not a case where you must give it away by the end of leg 6, because if it does that, then the express pass becomes the show. And like the U-turn that we've seen sometimes, I like thing twists or parts of the show in moderation. So the Express Pass is interesting for a little bit, and then it's not. And if it was more legs, then it would just become like, oh my gosh, I don't care. Please just give the Express Pass to anyone. So this is going to be a short thing. It's all next week. It'll be the Express Passes will be with the teams that they're going to be with. So that's good.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. And, you know, maybe this is like the first step on the road to our great idea of everyone gets an Express Pass. They get them right away. They got to give them out right away. And then they're done and they're over. And it opens the door up to have more Express Passes later.
It's true. Yeah, because even right now, they're going to give one out next week. And let's say, you know, the preview promised something weird, but let's not think about that. Everyone goes through and doesn't use it. You could have a case where three teams have Express Passes out of seven if someone gets eliminated next week. And that's, you're almost up to half already.
Yeah, I think it's all right. I think if you're going to have it a lot, or, you know, don't have it. If you have an advantage and a very small number of teams, like one or two, gets to take advantage of it, then it turns out that those teams, it gets a little heavily unbalanced. So I say everybody gets their shot at making something good out of the Express Pass, and I'm on board with it.
Right. And to do it so early, too, I just feel like, when you have a lot of teams, it also nullifies it a bit, because if you get to a case where you're down to five teams and two have Express Passes, I'm not sure when they have to use it by. So I may be speaking out of school here, but I like the idea of it kind of being part of the early part of the race. And then let's make the legs. And as we go, I assume the legs will get harder. So as that happens, then you got an Express Pass. It really becomes a case of, do we use it here? Do we use it here? There could be some good drama there.
I think we like nothing better than a team kind of deciding to use their Express Pass and then running into something that's really terrible and hard to get through. And then watching them have serious Express Passers remorse.
Yeah. And, you know, that'll probably happen.
I could see Giver giving away their Express Pass and then like running into some kind of task immediately that requires them to be very quiet and have a steady hand and calm and focused, and maybe they're regretting it at that point.
I actually wondered if they were going to use it this week, because they were struggling so much with the math, and that's where I give them a lot of credit, because instead of just saying we're going to use our Express Pass and moving on, they thought they did it smarter and actually got a team to help them. So then what happened is they don't lose anything by giving away that. They have to give it away. So why not get something out of it? And they weren't jerks about it. It was basically, you know, they get help. And then I was a little nervous, like, what happens if they don't actually give it to them then? But they did right away. So then you saw those teams both get to the mat at the same time, and they seem like kind of chummy, which it's always good to have friends, especially if you're an overdog team. When the U-turn comes, you want to have pals.
Absolutely. I thought that was perfect placement of the pass. And it also, I think it showed a little bit of self-awareness, because I think we need to contrast this with Andrea and Ebony taking that penalty last week. We need to look at this as, you know, they rolled up to the task and they saw other people doing the task. And in where Andrea and Ebony said, you know, this task is impossible, it's going to take everybody forever to get through, we might as well just take our penalty. You have Kenneth and Ryan show up and they see that other people are doing the task and they think, well, this task is going to be impossible for us, but maybe it's not impossible for everybody. And let's find somebody who's good at it and use our Express Pass accordingly. And then we still have the one that we can use ourselves. We've given away one of the ones we have to give away, and we've made some friends. It's kind of win-win-win.
Yeah, and it's one of those cases, too, where it might be a little cute, but if next week, let's say there's a task they don't do well, and then they help someone else helps them again, it's almost like they get three Express Passes, and they're able to actually use them like three Express Passes, because they have, let's say then in leg four or five, they have to do something else. Now, granted, a lot of things have to fall into place. You have to be at the task next to a team that wants to help you and that knows the answer, which may not happen again.
Yeah, it's true. It is really effectively like having that Express Pass used on yourself.
Right. But, you know, there could be some team. Karen and Bert were smart, too, because they got something out of it. It's where they were on the, both teams knew there were teams behind them. I think they were pretty clear they were not in seventh and eighth. So there's this thought of, well, I can help them out. Even if they pass us, I don't know if they knew exactly what place they were in, but they knew they were in the front half. So both teams handled it really well. And that's good to see. And overall, besides a bit of the Kenneth's, yelling during the task, they weren't that annoying. I don't know. I wouldn't say they're my favorite team now, but and that brings me into the giver question. Did they say giver during the whole leg at all?
Well, I was out this afternoon with a friend of mine who is an avid Amazing Race Canada viewer, and I had counted two givers, and he told me he counted three. So we will give the generous three to Team Giver, and that puts the giver count at 18 for the season up to date.
Well, that's interesting. So do you think that Team Giver has just decided that they're going to chill on the use of the word giver, or is the show deciding, hey, we've had enough of this?
That's an interesting question. It's something that I've thought a lot about. I wondered, we had a few comments to the effect of, are they trying out other catchphrases now? Have they decided that their new thing is going to be okay, or are they really just giving the giver a rest so they can bring it back later? Have they realized how totally obnoxious they were in the first episode and needed to tone it down? Did they get tired of cultivating this very aggressively, how do we describe this, aggressively cartoonish persona? Does that get old? Does that just drop off after a while? Or did the show just tell them to cool it and decide not to air any of it at all? There's so many different possibilities here, and it really does fascinate me because I thought they were going to double down on the giver.
Yeah, after I thought about it more, after we had our counts where I think I guessed 73, and I thought, man, they're going to knock that out in three episodes or four episodes. But now I look and I think I'm in pretty good shape here, because if they do even three or four or five each leg, it's like, oh, I've got a shot here. But it's weird. Part of me thinks, I would think maybe the show is pulling back, but then the show in the preview videos and such seemed to almost lean in or really dive headfirst into the full use of giver. So it seems weird that the show would pull back, but maybe they were still an important part of this leg, but they weren't as essential because they didn't finish first in this leg. So I think maybe also the next time we see them finish first, they'll be full on yelling and screaming the whole way.
So in other words, the use of giver is inversely proportional to their placement in the race.
Maybe. So when they finish seventh out of eight or something, there will be zero. But if they finish first, the sky is the limit at this point. No, I don't know. I thought that the express pass, giving the express pass, was about the most perfect opportunity they will ever have to use their phrase, but they didn't seem to take it. Maybe next week.
Maybe. We can only hope, because here I thought we were getting at least 10 givers an episode, and that has fallen off considerably. I don't know what's up, but I think you do make a good point that the show would not have leaned into giver if they were just going to edit out every instance of giver, because I do happen to know that there have been teams in the past, on the US version certainly, that created their own branding and decided this was going to be their catchphrase, they were going to have a thing, and the show was like, yeah, not so much, and then they buried it. So I think if the show's going along with it, the show's going to play it up. So I'm going to say Ken and Ryan decided they were not going to cruise along with the giver this episode. And who knows why? Who knows if it'll be back? What happened to giver? Where's giver?
You know, it's funny, though, that we actually sound kind of sad about this, like we're disappointed. But if we re-listened to last week, where we were both just like, oh, my gosh, we're going to hit our heads on the table the whole week. And now it's the opposite. And we're both like, oh, it's too bad. But we should discuss, I think, the other teams, because
why?
I know people are going to complain. We just made it the giver show. But we have yet to mention the team that was eliminated. Sadly, our YouTube celebrities or friends, Dan and Raya, who were on my team that I drafted. They were my last team I picked and didn't seem to do anything, in my opinion, terribly wrong. They were a little slow on tasks, weren't great with navigation, but this was one of those situations where no one made a huge error, so they just were a little worse. Am I right on that?
It seemed like they got a little bit lost, but yeah, overall, I think you're right. It was just like they didn't quite, and I'm going to go there, they didn't quite give her.
Stop it. You don't get to add that to the count. Let me be clear.
Yeah, well, I think it only counts if they say it themselves. It's their word, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you're right. I didn't see a big blunder from any of them. It seemed like Team YouTube was really just kind of moseying along. They got a little bit lost, knocked them to the back very early on. And then after that, they just never made up the time that they needed to make. And I mean, you have to be sad about this because not only are they your team, I mean, that guy was named Dan and you guys have to stick together, right?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, Dan is a pretty common name. We have seen a Dan win the Amazing Race US, so it can happen, you know, but I'm a little sad. And also now because, you know, it narrows down the teams I have. So I have to root more for Team Giver, but I also get to root for Karen and Bird, who I very like. So, you know, it's one of those things where in their preview videos, you saw that Dan and Rhea, they kind of talked like, they weren't that great at the race and they were going to be a little overwhelmed or not the best. And I thought, oh, that's not true. There's teams all the time, you know, that act like that. Well, I guess that's true. They weren't that great. So I don't know. When you only have a cast of 10 teams and you don't have like I feel like season 3, it was just like Mistake City. But you have a cast overall that seems fairly competent that we're having right now. Like Adam and Andrea seem like pretty solid racers, except for when they get lost and they keep finishing and near the bottom of the pack. So that tells you this is a pretty solid group of racers. And if you're just a little bit slower, you're done.
Yeah, when we were doing our draft, we said there didn't seem to be anybody here apart from one team and maybe two teams that really felt like they were out of their element. And by and large, it's turned out that even the team we thought was, you know, maybe the second worst on the board, turns out they're a lot better than we thought they were. And that really leaves no room for error. And so I think I'm not surprised to see Team YouTube go out in the slot. I don't think anybody was particularly high on them, and they didn't seem like they were, to borrow a phrase from another reality program, I wasn't totally sure they were there for the right reasons.
Yeah, well, you saw at the end, he had a quote near the end, which I'm going to take a moment to pull up. He said that this will maybe lead to better YouTube content. And then he paused and he said, and better friendship. I was like, oh, and I know they're really good friends, but the fact that content even was up there among the most important things. Yeah, this might not be the worst thing. That was the thing. I just didn't feel that sense of urgency. Like I felt like Corey and Ivana almost were like losing their minds. I mean, not really, but they were really nervous, like really tense because they thought they were going to get eliminated. And you didn't see it as much with the YouTubers. And granted, sometimes that laid back attitude can work. But here I felt like they just, I hate to go to the old sports phrase about who wanted it more. I didn't get the impression they were as invested in winning as Corey and Ivana.
Yeah. And I mean, to be fair, if you have a YouTube channel and this is your bread and butter and you have a viral video that catches the interest of casting for a reality show and they say, hey, you guys want to travel around on our dime and be on the most popular show in the country and, you know, get a lot of visibility, you're not going to turn that down.
Oh, no, I totally agree. And I don't mean to, I thought they were cool people and I thought they could be funny. I'm actually a little disappointed we didn't get to see them in more legs because I think they could have had fun moments. And I don't mean to be too rough on the content thing. It's more about just, you know, looking at that and saying, yeah, that's their gig. That's their job. So I'm sure they wanted to go further probably to, because the longer they're on, the more, you know, it's going to be good for them.
Yeah. Of course, on the other hand, now granted, it's a different world up in Canada, where this is the number one show in Canada. But, you know, we also heard during the social media mogul season of Amazing Race US, it's like somebody like Tyler Oakley doesn't necessarily need the boost that he gets from Amazing Race. Like they were hoping that people would watch the show because of him and not the other way around.
Right. In that case, I think it was just that Tyler and Corey were big fans of the show and were like, we'll do this. This sounds great. Where the show is going, yeah, this will help. In this case, yeah, I don't have a good gauge on, I know they've gotten a ton of views, but in terms of YouTubers and what's considered like really popular and what's kind of popular and how that works. So I don't want to claim that I know that, but I would assume the show figured it couldn't hurt to do this based on what we talked about last week.
It's not the first time that they've done this sort of thing. Like I believe Rob and Ryan were recruited off of YouTube or because one of them was on famous guy on YouTube. Like that's them, right? They were bartenders. They came
from
a
place. Right.
They weren't like they were basically invisible the entire season. One of them had a fairly popular YouTube show, and I think that's where they found him. It bears mention that just because you are a famous YouTube celebrity, that doesn't preclude you being a fan of the show. You make a very good point, Dan. So it's possible that they, you know, they were there for the experience. They wanted to have fun. They thought it might be not bad for their brand. The show comes to them. Of course, you say yes, but I think it still makes for better television if you have people that are really in it to race and that are going to give 110% all the time and that feel competitive. And I don't know that Dan and Rhea necessarily did.
Right. I mean, it was impressive, when they went to do the shooting task, because they're, you know, the limited stations detour, which we'll get to. But I was thinking they are going to have a hard time. So it was actually cool to see, you know, he was a sniper or whatever. It seemed like that he did pretty well, where I look at that and I'm like, I would never hit the target. That's like the worst challenge I could possibly have. So they did push through, and it looked like they were right on the go. I mean, at least that shot we saw looked like both teams were on the golf course in the same shot. So at the end, it didn't seem like the foot race was like minutes apart, but it was really close. So they gave a really capable effort, and just unfortunately, the two fitness trainers probably could run a little faster.
Yeah, it was a really tight, really heart pounding kind of ending. And I do appreciate those. But let's go ahead and talk about the tasks. I think I appreciated the nod to Fort McMurray having been in the news. And this was something I think we got a few questions. People asked us if this was something that we were aware of in the States. And I think obviously it wasn't as big a story here, but it was something that definitely made headlines. It was something I'd been aware of. And of course, where I grew up, my hometown, is probably about an 8-hour drive south of Fort McMurray. And the air quality was affected where I grew up. And so I'd heard about it from that angle quite a bit. So it was a very tragic thing, these wildfires that swept through last year, and they've really had to rebuild quite a bit. And this is kind of a tiny town. It's a really insular community. It's very remote. Like, if you look at Fort McMurray on a map, it's not near anything. And I think to kind of bring it back to the story of hope of like people putting their lives back together after these wildfires, it was a really good time to showcase it. And a really, I think they were very sensitive about it on the whole.
Yeah, I agree. And that's the scene with Megan and Courtney with the pilot who pointed out his house, like, oh, that was my place. And I was just like, oh, man, you know, it's really the fact that you have the guy pointing out his own house really brought it home to how devastating that was. You could see it had an effect on the racers, too, where when they get in the helicopter and fly over that. And I had heard about it, but I was not familiar enough to know just how bad it was. When you see this town, I mean, you see the whole area, and it's awful. And I'm sure they're still dealing with a lot of issues. So for a show like The Amazing Race to go do tests there, and actually even to go there, regardless of just the fire, I like it when they're going to different places that I don't know much about, rather than, you know, Vancouver, Toronto. Those are nice places, but it's cool to go somewhere different. And I also appreciated that here, too.
Yeah, and I think it also lessens the chance that you're going to have tasks that are like, now we're going to go and do flair bartending to celebrate the vibrant nightlife of this urban area. No shade intended necessarily on the flair bartending task of last season, which was entertaining when it happened and did not, in fairness, take place in Canada. But I like that they are finding new places to go to all the time. And it's really amazing that they have not run out of ideas in 5 seasons, and they've always done such a great job of showcasing the area that they're in, even if it's a place where an American may not have ever heard of it.
Right. Yeah, it's cool. And especially, I mean, the ropes course was fine. I know that was set up for the, you know, to get the express passes and all that. But I felt like obviously the detour was really the centerpiece in terms of the area, especially the pump it task in terms of the fire department. And for that, I feel like they had to put in the limited stations for that, really, because all the teams would have done that task. And I understand it. I mean, as a task, I still don't know how hard or easy it was, but it's a cool way to get them to, you know, to actually do something that people did in a real event, not just like a fake thing like you're going to do this and this happened. No, it impacts. I mean, it goes back to something that was a real issue in the community.
It does. And I give props to everybody that did the task for not pointing out that if they had been there during the actual wildfire, more people would have died. I was waiting for that to happen.
People had respect. It does, you know, some people shaking hands of the firefighters and, you know, and even when teams were getting a little flabbergasted by how things worked, you did get the sense nobody was completely losing it. You know, it's like, which could have happened with you get mud in the hose or the Andrea and Ebony right away couldn't even lift the thing. But I don't, if you ask me to explain exactly what they did there beyond their hosing down some stuff, I'm not sure I could have understood it. But I don't really think that was the point. It was more to showcase that in a task that in general seemed to take about the same amount of time for every team.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I'm trying to imagine like Jillian and Emmett doing that task and like getting mud caught in the hose. Can you imagine Jillian's reaction to that?
Yeah, she was one where it'd be like it'd be something very like cultural and stuff. And not that she was insensitive, but she was in her own zone. So we don't seem so far to have any one on that scale in terms of freakouts yet. But I guess it's early, so we'll see.
I want to talk a little bit about the limited stations, because I know this is a controversial topic in Amazing Race circles. Some people really hate it and some people really like it. Like, Dan, how do you feel about it?
It really depends for me, because I get annoyed when I feel like it can penalize a team. Like, you have those cases where it's set up and there are six teams left and they only put in four stations in a place that could easily have more. And it's almost set up so those two teams can be in trouble. Or, you know, I don't know. It can really vary case to case. In general, I don't like it, but here, I don't know. Here, it didn't bother me as much because it didn't feel as manipulative. I felt like teams showed up, but it didn't seem to hurt them that much in general because they were already behind. I don't know. I didn't really have a strong reaction. There have been times when I feel like, okay, that's ridiculous. They're just coming up with some random arbitrary number. And you could say that five was an arbitrary number, but it seemed to me that in this case, they knew teams were going to do the firefighting one. So I feel like they had to find some way if they were going to make a detour to impact it. Do you agree, or am I giving them too much leeway here?
No, I agree to a point, although I think that if they are going to have limited stations, you know, let's just pretend for a minute that there are no outside circumstances that ever dictate the number of stations you can have somewhere. Like, let's just say we don't have, like, you know, a certain number of biplanes or, you know, bartending stations or what have you. And let's just assume that we can have as many or as few as we like. And I think it's always incumbent on the show to make it half and half. Like, what I don't like is if there are nine teams left and they're like, only seven people can do this half of the detour, the other two of you have to go and do calculus and everybody else can throw baseballs, you know?
Yeah. And I wonder, one thing that I thought of as I was talking, I remember that. So there were five stations, but I noticed that we saw Zed and Shabir show up and have to go do the other one. But then all the other teams did the other one. And I don't know if we saw all of them get rejected. So by that point, when those teams seemed to arrive at Pullet, the other teams would have been done. They were moving on. Was this not just a case? Because sometimes you have it where you can wait. Someone finishes, you can do it. The impression I got here was they only had five and that was it, which that's a little different because a lot of times I've seen it where there's only three open and you can wait and you'll get to go in then. But I don't think that was the case this time. I think it was five and that's it.
Yeah, well, when you're talking about putting out fires, that makes a lot of sense because they're only going to set five fires and those five fires are going to burn however long they're going to burn. And then they're going to put them out and they're not going to build more fires. And I think in Fort McMurray, of all places, they're not going to build more fires than they're contracted to do.
Now, that's a really good point I hadn't considered, because it's not a case like, oh, you know, we're only going to have five tables and we don't want to set it up. This is something that they probably had to do a lot of pre-planning to even get permission to even set those fires there.
Right, right. When it comes to fire, they do not mess around in Fort McMurray.
Yeah, I can imagine. But what did you think? I mean, did you think the tasks were exciting to see the shooting and the beyond? If we set aside the connection to the fire and what the firefighters do, were the tasks exciting, the detours? I mean, was it something that was cool to watch teams do?
I always think that shooting tasks are fun. It's fun to watch because you're pretty much guaranteed that there's going to be people that are out of their element and they're going to have to figure it out. And most of those tasks do have a learning curve to them, the point where almost anybody can figure it out eventually. And it's true that putting the fire element aside, we're really not showcasing the area in this really culturally unique and deep-rooted way, because these are all tasks we've seen in innumerable other places in the world. Like, you can do trap shooting anywhere. You can do golf anywhere. It's really more the sort of thing where I think you pick some things, and I've said this before, there's kind of three categories of a task. You have something that's local color, something that's good television, and something that's good racing. And most tasks hit two of those three marks. So do I think that the shooting maybe hit two of those three marks? Yeah, absolutely. No pun intended.
Yeah, and I mostly agree. I do, and you make a good point about the shooting, because there are a few things more entertaining than watching somebody come up and just fail, not fail forever, fail at first, and fail in a comical way where they're like, I wasn't even close, like when teams have to throw things at a target or whatever. So that is entertaining, and it also offset, because we did have the one that was really locally based and had to do with the community event on the other side. So here you could have one that was more, like you said, the race and something to that side of it. So it worked out okay. And I like, too, that we had the extra test after, so it could possibly change things up a little bit, even though the two teams in the back were just too far back.
Yeah, and I think the show always does a really exceptional job of finding tasks that are kind of very well balanced and that give a team that's far behind the opportunity to catch up if they're very good at something, or give a team a chance to fall behind if they're really bad at something. And these were not the most exciting tasks that we've ever seen on this show, and they weren't the most locally colorful tasks we've seen, but it was okay. It succeeded at what it was trying to do. And not every episode is going to be one of these episodes where we write it down in our book of favorite episodes of all time.
Right. And also, too, I think a lot of the focus of this episode was Fort McMurray itself, which I do complain sometimes when the show goes somewhere cool and then ignores where they go, and they go just, oh, let's go to a trampoline park, or let's, you know, do something, you know, or something that just, you know, or they go to the opposite end and do something so cliche for the area that you just, you know, like in Rome, where they do like a silly toy chariot race or something. So, but here I felt like they respected the place. It was interesting to me, and that can carry an episode. And I also like episodes with math. I don't want every episode to have a math test, but they had another one in season three like this. I think that was one where like six teams finally worked together, except for, Simi and Ope, who wouldn't do it and then ended up in last. So I like when they put in things that force rate that aren't just physical or scary, or, you know, or navigation or whatever. You get a task that's just kind of like, the racers don't come into the show thinking we're going to have to do math, or we're going to have to memorize something and sing it. Just kind of these odd tasks that also you can find people that are really good at. When we started, if you had said, which team is going to be the best at math ever? I'm not sure who I would have picked, but, you know, it makes sense that Megan was really good at it. But I didn't know that. And that gave them a chance to shine and finish first, which was really cool. I want to see teams surprise me. And that was the best part of the leg.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm 100% on board with this. You have to be able to have the kind of tasks that nobody is expecting. Like, everyone knows they're going to have to jump off of something high, whether they're bungee jumping or parachuting or base jumping or what have you. But nobody comes in expecting that they're going to have to solve an algebra problem. And this is kind of like your ability to take whatever comes at you, whether it's something you accounted for or not. Like, that's how you tell who is a good racer.
Right. Because you have to be able to either, you know, power through it or figure out we're screwed and get a team to help you. And there's different ways to do that successfully, which Team Giver did pretty well with the Express Pass and whatnot. Or you have the teams that work together, like we saw Zed and Shabir and Adam and Andrea do, which was really smart, because those teams are like, okay, we know we're not back there. But I like seeing that, where you have the teams who kind of have to think on their feet and do something. Like, you have these different teams who end up finishing 6 and 7 work together smartly because those teams behind them were not that far behind. So it forces teams to do different things, and that generally leads to a good show. Teams just saying woo and doing basic tasks gets old pretty fast.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And I think, like, we've talked about this a fair amount before. If you have a task where everybody has to come up with the same answer and you are there with another team and you know there are teams behind you, there is zero downside to working together and coming up with the answer together. It fosters goodwill. It makes sure you're both still in the race together. And, you know, if it's something that's not in your wheelhouse, there chances are somebody on the other team is going to be better at it than you. And that helps you.
Right. Yeah. And it's just, especially when you know it's probably the last task, it's not like you're doing this. Like, there's been times where teams all work together on some hard roadblock to start the leg. And I go, oh, that might not have been smart because you're bunching. But when you're this far into the leg, you're probably expecting the pit stop to be next. There's no reason to mess around. With this many teams left, all you got to do is beat one team. And if you know two are behind you, just go.
The only thing you have to worry about in that moment is just not being last.
Right, because you look at who's still on the board, and I look at Corey and Ivana and Adam and Andrea, they're 7 and 8, but I still don't think they're the two worst teams, but they survived. So you look at that and you say, next week, maybe there's something that requires, I don't know, more physical strength or does not require Adam and Andrea to drive anywhere. And you might be in great shape because so it's just they've two legs. They've gotten lost both times. So I don't know if this is a good thing, but they've proven that they're both pretty good at tasks. So that'll catch up. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens. We did learn some more about a few of these teams near the back too, you know, some sad stories about basketball injuries, but and actually more seriously, Ivana with her background. So that was interesting to get some background, some color on these teams.
Yeah, I was worried for a brief moment that was going to be the end of Corey and Ivana. Like, if you get a sob story right up front on an episode, that frequently means you're going home. So I was very glad to find out that was not what was actually happening there.
I agree. I actually thought they were going to get eliminated when I saw that. And I was like, oh, it's really too bad they're going to get eliminated right here. Oh, but that's Justice team. So I'm okay with that. but no, because along with that, we also saw something where she talked about being an elementary school teacher. And we had that story. So I was like, wow, we are learning a lot about Ivana this week, which is great. But we have been trained when that happens to be like, okay, this team's either going to get eliminated or they're going to end up being the winner or somewhere near the end. And I'm not spoiled. It's just you normally don't see that this early for the show to stop with this many teams around twice to talk about one racer. So, I mean, but her first one, her story is definitely unique. And I love how the show spotlights the fact that it's such, even though it's Amazing Race Canada, the cast is so international. And that's something that I wish we saw more in the United States version. And we don't see the fact that there are people from live in Canada from all over the world.
Yeah, I love that. We've had teams of immigrants and, you know, second generation people with distinct like cultural identities. I think that's been a through line throughout the entire series run. And we have people like from Montreal that feel very connected to their Italian heritage, for instance. Yeah. So you have Zed and Shabir, where Shabir grew up in the Congo in a family of diplomats, and you have Karen, who is from Ghana, and you have so many different people with different connections around the world. And that's what the show, that's what the whole franchise is about, right?
Yeah. And that's the thing. The real point, I mean, the point for me is yes, it's a game show, and yes, there's competition and strategy and all of that, but there are a lot of shows like that. The reason The Amazing Race stands out, especially The Amazing Race Canada, is you're meeting interesting people. You're reminded that there's so many cool places in Canada and around the world, and it's enjoyable to spend time with such a diverse group of people with different relationships. And that's something I feel like that this version of the show has done so well, regardless of if one season's better than the other or one has better legs. The cast have been diverse and interesting and have cool stories every season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like they don't hit the same marks every year either. Like, we have had, you know, I several years ago now, like way back in the infancy of my coverage for Rob Has a Podcast, wrote this blog entry called The 11 Teams You Always See on The Amazing Race. And those 11 teams keep showing up every season of the US version, and it's not so cut and dried in the Canadian version. And I appreciate that a lot as well.
Yeah, I mean, they do a good job with, especially with parent-child teams, with different relationships people have. And even when it's pretty standard, like, you know, a brother, sister or a married couple, it doesn't seem like the same married couple every time or the same siblings. So that's, I know we've kind of veered off into let's just praise the Amazing Race Canada, but that's what happens. That seems to happen to us every summer. So, you know, we've reached that point. But overall, I think this is a good cast. I think this was a good leg. I hope the legs and tasks get even better as we go along.
I have no doubt that they will, Dan. I feel like, yeah, we've reached the point where we're at the point of drunkenness where we're just like, you know what? I love you, man. I think you're so awesome. And, you know, that's the thing I like about you. So that's the thing we like about you, Amazing Race Canada. So with that, Dan, do we have any questions that the listeners have submitted about this episode?
You know, it was a little lighter on questions this week than last week. I think being the premiere, you're bound to get more questions. But just a reminder to everyone that Twitter, you know, you don't even have to wait for me to call questions. Once you've watched the episode, just tweet me at the Dan Heaton or Jess at Haymaker Hattie. And we'll repeat those again at the end of the show. But feel free to send us your questions. But first, I will get to a few questions that we had. Derek Sue did ask if this was the worst outcome of three express passes. Now, we know it's not the best, but Jess, do you think this is the worst outcome having Team Giver get all three?
You know, I don't like to disparage Team Giver that much, especially since, you know, as we said, they kind of dialed back the obnoxiousness this episode. But I do think this is one of the worst outcomes because I think the show was really hoping that you'd have like maybe one team get two, another team get one, and then you get the drama of giving away the pass. But you also have it kind of spread out and a team feeling like they really earned something. But yeah, I think one team getting all three passes is kind of an embarrassment of riches, and that it's this team in particular ensures they're going to be around for longer, and they're kind of deliberately large characters. I think certainly going into this episode, if you'd asked me to name the worst case scenario, that's what I would have said. But it's not as bad as I thought. Like I didn't want to throw something at my TV every time I heard the word giver because I didn't hear it that often this week. I think, yeah, it's one of the worst outcomes, but it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, I agree, because last week I may have even said that was the worst outcome on our show, but I was anticipating much worse. And there's also these cases where they get three and then they give one and then somehow both teams use it. And it's like, well, like we had the season where Hamilton and Michaela got an express pass and immediately used it when they didn't need it and then got eliminated next week. And I'm not blaming them, but I'm saying that was unfortunate just because it was kind of like, ugh. So I feel like given what we saw with the way that Giver and Kieran and Burt used it, it was not that bad. So we'll see what happens. So here's a related question from Gregory McBean. Both of these were from the Rob is a Podcast Facebook group. He said, which teams did Giver give the last express pass to? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I would have had an answer going into this episode that I think my answer might change, because I would have said you give it away to the Newfie cousins because they seem like the least amount of a threat. But now I'm thinking they're actually pretty formidable and they are maybe they've got it in them to do very, very well at this without the benefit of an express pass. So I don't think there is an obvious answer. I think their strategy of finding a task where they can get some help and then giving that express pass out as leverage is a good one, and one they could certainly do again.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like it has to be more based on situation, because if you really look at the teams that finish near the back, it's like I mentioned, Adam and Andrea, Corey and Ivana, Zed and Shabir seem like very solid racers. And Andrea and Ebony finished second, who we haven't really mentioned tonight, but they were doing very well and actually right there for first for a while up until the math, I believe. So I don't have a pick. There's usually when we get this kind of question, there's always a couple teams where I'm like, yeah, give it to them. And I don't really see it this time. So I have to agree with that. Did you see any questions you wanted to ask?
Well, I like Gregory's other question. Is cheesecake really a breakfast of champions? And honestly, what the hell are they feeding people during their you know, during their pit stops.
That endeared me to them, though. I think it was Courtney. I'm trying to remember if it was Courtney or Megan who said that. But it did make me laugh because, one, I'm thinking, do you really want to eat cheesecake before you run on the race? But I guess, you know, it does give you that jolt of sugar. So it maybe it's OK. But who knows? Yeah, maybe they're just getting these giant buffets. We don't really see what they get to eat. So they're living it up on the Amazing Race Canada.
It's like a big old craft services table. And yeah, I don't. And also, in fairness, I don't know what they eat for breakfast in Canada. Maybe cheesecake's standard. But yeah, I was a little surprised by that answer. And that early in the day, I mean, you want cheesecake right before you can go to sleep.
It pretty much makes me want to go to sleep when I have cheesecake. So it's not the thing I want to run out on the race. We did have a question on Twitter. Well, more of a kind of a question. Ryan Giraldi, and I apologize if I pronounced that incorrectly, or Giraldi. He said, wait, who takes glamour shots to show they're an elementary school teacher? So Jess, help me out. Who does this? Or is it a rhetorical question?
I think we have the answer to that. We know who does it because we saw the glamour shots in the episode.
Well, you know, I mean, it's important. You gotta look good when you're an elementary school teacher, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. There's never a dull moment. Like I said, interesting characters on the race that are fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, and I'm optimistic about the rest of the season. I think we're off to a good start, and it's only going to get better from here. So I wanted to throw out our usual administrative notes. We get a lot of questions from people because, you know, I think astute listeners will know that Dan and I are not Canadian ourselves. And, you know, you can guess at how we are watching the episodes every week as they come out, because we don't really have our own CTV feed and we don't fly to Canada every week just to catch the episodes. But there are a lot of ways you can view The Amazing Race Canada if you're not in Canada yourself. But I think the easiest way to find out where all of those places are is to become a patron of Rob as a Podcast. And you can do that by signing up at patreon.com. And for a low, low contribution, you get access to the Facebook group of patrons. It's a chance to connect with your fellow fans. It's a really fun place to talk about all the fun stuff that goes on in the Rob Has a Podcast universe. And we have a dedicated thread where our dedicated listeners source links for viewing Amazing Race Canada. And it's been really great. I want to send a special shout out to John, who has been so great at finding links for us this season and really giving us a chance to catch the episodes fairly early in the week. Gives us enough time to think about what we're going to do about podcasting, and it really helps us out. So that's my pitch for becoming a patron. There are many, many great benefits. That is but one. And we invite you all to continue the dialogue. You can reach out to us on social media. You can hit me up on Twitter at Haymaker Hattie. And Dan, where are you?
I am at the Dan Heaton. And we love questions and comments about the show, so keep them coming.
Yeah, and once again, like we said before, don't worry about when we're going to watch the episode. Just as you're catching it, just start tweeting at us. And we are grown-ups. We can handle being spoiled. It's not a problem. So I hope you're all having a great week, and we will see you late next week for episode 3. So thanks all for tuning in.